What's up, guys? Welcome to Nation Hoops Podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. Post-Media Day edition of the podcast. Here joined by Paul, a.k.a. at Rockets Intellect on Twitter. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. Excited for the season to start.
Yeah, me too. Training camp starts tomorrow. We just finished up here with Media Day, and everyone felt excited. Everyone was excited. There was a first day of school feeling in the air. Everyone felt genuinely, you know, pumped for training camp tomorrow, and it felt really light, and I think that's the biggest takeaway I got from Media Day. There wasn't a tension in the air, I don't want to say addition by subtraction, but it felt with Dwight Howard's departure, like there wasn't a tension in the air. Everyone felt freer, everyone felt, you know, looser, everyone felt, you know, generally more happy. And I don't want to blame that all on Dwight, but that's just the way it felt coming out of Media Day. Did you get that same feeling?
Yeah, I got the sense that they felt free in terms of how they want to go about next season. And I feel like it was, in fact, a breath of fresh air to just be without Dwight. And say what you want about Dwight, but his actual presence the last year was kind of a burden. Whether you want to fault him or not is another question. But it's kind of hard to argue with the fact that Dwight just was a distraction and things were not clicking. So I think everyone was genuinely excited to start the season. And like you said, first day of school and all that. Yeah. And James especially, I think, felt like he could be felt excited about running the show with being the unquestioned leader. I felt that James was particularly excited along with Trevor.
Yeah, and that's kind of what everybody was kind of looking forward to, James Harden and how he felt going into everything. But before we discuss Media Day and everyone's interview, let's discuss the breaking news that came our way yesterday. The Rockets traded Michael Beasley for backup point guard Tyler Ennis from the Bucks. How do you feel about this trade? Because I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I was super excited that the Rockets traded Michael Beasley. I was actually surprised that they actually managed to get an asset back. Because Michael Beasley, I mean, say what you want, he's just not a positive on the basketball court. And I just think he's not a good basketball player. He's a horrendous defender. He's like a legendary chucker. And he's not particularly efficient. And, you know, for some reason, he has this weird underground following with Rockets Twitter. Running a site and, you know, having a Rockets Twitter account, you kind of get that. And I know you get that a lot on your Rockets Twitter. I mean, it's just weird. He has this odd following that will stand by him no matter what. Like it always angered me when I heard, like, he was the second best offensive player on the team. But, yeah, how did you feel about this trade? How did you feel about Michael Beasley in general while you was here? And how do you feel about the addition of Tyler Ennis?
Yeah, I was a known Michael Beasley hater, at least in terms of being on the Rockets and contributing to my favorite team. He was a net negative overall. They were worse on offense with him on the floor. They were worse on defense with him on the floor. And he was just a horrendous net negative overall. So I'm really pleased that I'm really pleased about the fact that I don't have to go into the season worrying about whether or not Michael Beasley will get any meaningful minutes. And that itself is a positive. And Tyler Ennis might not be an NBA player, but just being free of Michael Beasley is a blessing in its own. And, you know, maybe Tyler Ennis ends up being a solid backup point guard. I often trust Morey in these deals for backup point guard for point guards, you know, with his history with Aaron Brooks and trading for guys like Goran Dragic and Kyle Lowry. Not to say that Tyler Ennis will be as good as any of those guys, he probably won't, but, you know, there's reason to be optimistic about him. He was a good player at Syracuse. He can pass a little bit, so yeah, good trade by Morey. Awesome trade.
Yeah, and the real story here is he brought in a player from China and he turned him into an asset. I mean, that's exactly what he did. He brought in Michael Beasley from China and he turned him into a trade asset. Whether or not you think Tyler Ennis is a big haul or not, he's, you know, certainly I would say, a bigger haul than Michael Beasley. I would say the Rockets went out in this trade. And, you know, you're right. Daryl Morey does have a history of bringing in good point guards. It's not just the stars that he's bringing. He just brings in guys who are productive, whether or not they'll grow into any, you know, meaningful player in the NBA. Like Pablo Prigioni last year, when he traded for Pablo Prigioni last year, you know, he certainly contributed to the Rockets' cause last year, and he helped them get where they were. And if you can get any sort of backup point guard production from him, I'd say it's a successful trade. I agree with you. That was one of my biggest worries with Michael Beasley, is like, I really did not want him to get minutes coming into this season. I just don't think he's a very particularly good NBA player, you know, as we detailed earlier. And it's just, you know, the numbers speak for itself. He's a net negative. He never helps the team. I mean, you know, he's a really good mid-range shooter. And I think a lot of people confuse that with him being a really good NBA player, which is just not the case. I mean, if you look at his contract, he wouldn't be on the team. I mean, he wouldn't have the contract he has if he was as good as this underground following of Beasley supporters would, you know, portray him out to be. I mean, his second year was a team option, and if he was truly that great, his agent would have negotiated him a better deal for him. So yeah, overall, solid trade. We don't have to worry about it, and maybe a good sign as far as Demo's, I guess, arrival back on the team. Perhaps with Michael Beasley's departure, the Rockets might have a better feeling about him coming in and perhaps accepting that qualifying offer that they left for Monty Unis. But yeah, overall, okay trade, and something interesting going into training camp for today. So let's go ahead and talk about media day. So the first people up on the board was Leslie Alexander. He really didn't say anything, to be honest. He just mentioned that the Rockets were going to be much better than everybody else thought they were, yada, yada, yada. You know, the usual spiel. Leslie Alexander says he defended Harden and whatnot. When it really started to get interesting was when Daryl Morey got up on the stage. And a quote from him that I really found fascinating is he compared the Rockets this season, the kind of feel in the air, to 2014-15 when they really surprised everybody. Here, I'll go ahead and play that audio for you real quick.
Can they survive without this player or that player that isn't here? You know, we surprised everyone and won at a very high level, made the Western Conference Finals. That's extremely difficult to do, but we're going to take it a game at a time and play really hard.
So, I mean, from that audio clip, do you agree with it? Like, did you agree that that's the kind of feel you get, the 2014-15 feeling, whether or not you think they'll win that many games or actually reach that kind of playoff success? Do you agree that that's the kind of feel you got in the media day today?
Yeah, I feel like this team is being underestimated by just people that I've talked to in general and on basketball Twitter as a whole. I think that this team's ceiling and floor is higher than people think it is. But at the same time, this team, I'd be legitimately shocked if this team won 56 games. James Harden did a great job without Dwight, but the Rockets aren't going to get a player as good, aren't going to have a secondary player as good as 2015 Dwight Howard. And even though he wasn't healthy, he did contribute to like some absurd record to start the year, like, I don't know, 12-1 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just not realistic to think 56 games.
Yeah,
and is attainable.
Yeah, and you're right. They started off really hot. I think they started off the season like undefeated up until they went to the Warriors. Up until they played the Warriors, and that's really where they lost their first game. I agree. I don't think they're gonna start off that hot or win that many games. But I think it's possible that they surpass people's expectations. I mean, I read this stat all the time, but if you look at the past 5 years and you look at the top five offenses in the NBA, which we expect the Rockets to have, every team that's had a top five offense in the last 5 years has won 50 games. So, and so that's a 5-year sample size. And if you even take that back to a 10-year sample size, every team that's had a top five offense within the past 10 years has won 50 games, except for the 2010 New York Knicks. So that's 49 out of 50 teams within the past 10 years that have won 50 games with the top five offense alone. So I think that's really underrated. You know, how far an offense can take you is really underrated. It's, you know, in some ways equal to defense in terms of how many wins you can get out of it. And I think it's being overlooked. I think having a top five offense is certainly a realistic expectation for the team, considering they had a top seven offense this year and the multiple overhauls they had on the roster and the coaching staff with Mike D'Antoni and the shooting that they brought in. I think it's realistic. Wouldn't you say so?
Top five offense?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be shocked if they were like top two offensively, but I definitely think top five is something that they're going to have to be if they want to be a good team. Top five offense is a good goal to have. It's definitely something that they're going to have to achieve. If they're top seven, that would be a pretty massive disappointment, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. But that's the same as last year. Yeah.
Look, the shooting that is surrounding James Harden is pretty unprecedented in terms of his stay with Houston. He really just hasn't had any shooters like Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, and he hasn't had four shooters on the floor at all times or anything like that. And I feel like we could see just an incredibly explosive offense led by him, and just really fun to watch as well. So top five, yeah, maybe even top two. Probably not top one because the Warriors are like a tank of destruction.
Yeah.
But top five, very much in play, likely, in my opinion.
Yeah. So if that's a reasonable floor, I think it's likely that they're going to surprise people's expectations. So let's go ahead and talk about the second interesting point he brought up in his interview. And, you know, we've talked about this on Twitter, and I wrote a column on this. Clint Capella is primed for a breakout season this year. He averaged 19 minutes a game last year. And so just by virtue of him averaging 30 minutes a game, he's going to put up impressive numbers. He's probably going to average a double-double. And if he even got a marginally better in the offseason, I mean, he's a candidate for most improved player. And I really think that's an aspect of this team that's being overlooked. Clint Capella, you know, I think by the halfway point in the season, people are really going to start to notice him as the Rockets' second best player. What do you think?
Yeah, that's something that I've actually been harping on throughout the entirety of the offseason. I thought he was the Rockets' second, clearly, in my opinion, the Rockets' second best player post All-Star break during the regular season. I think him and Harden have a chemistry that is important, and I feel like, unlike Dwight, he just runs to set screens, and he has no problem staying active on offense, even if he doesn't get to touch the ball as frequently, which is an underrated asset in terms of big men. And I think he's primed for an awesome season. I think he's going to average like 13 and 11 or something like that if he gets the minutes. Something that I was surprised by in what Morey said was actually saying.
We'll bring it up right now here. Let's play that audio real quick.
Going to need some of those guys to step up, and with all those options, we're hoping something emerges there.
Expectations increase for Capella?
Yeah, no, Clint is someone that, for us to have the season we want to have, which is to get home court in the Western Conference and to make a deep playoff run, and hopefully deeper than I've ever been in my career, Clint is going to have to take a big step forward, and it's not an easy step to go from playing 15 to 20 minutes against often not the starting center to playing, 25 plus minutes against frontline guys. That's a big step forward. The game's more physical. It takes a big toll on your body to do that night in and night out. He's added a lot of muscle. He's worked extremely hard over the last 2 years and this offseason. So we feel like he's someone who can take that step forward. But that is something that we're going to need if we're going to be as successful as we want, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
So that's what he said. You can go ahead and comment what you were going to say.
Yeah, I was actually going to comment on the fact that there was a little bit of question of who was going to start.
And yeah.
D'Antoni when Morey sort of deferred to D'Antoni for who would start. I got the sense that it was 50-50-ish, if not 50-50, leaning towards Nene, which I was pretty surprised by. And I think Capella should start because he is your future and he needs to be really good for the Rockets to be good this season. And you can't rely on Nene. So that was something that sort of struck me that was rather surprising. I was 95% sure that Capella would start in the offseason, but that does not seem to be the case.
Yeah, see, I didn't get that vibe listening to their press conference. I do know what you're talking about when he kind of referenced towards D'Antoni as to who's going to start. And I don't really think they gave any indicator as to who's going to start. I think it felt like they talked about Nene kind of excessively for a backup center. But at the same time, I don't think I don't think that's what's ultimately going to happen, because I do think D'Antoni is a smart guy, and I do think he understands the kind of future, you know, Clint Capella could have for him and how important it is to start him right away and give him his reps. Even if Nene starts, I still think Clint Capella is going to average more minutes than Nene, potentially just giving Nene that ceremonial start for like 5-10 minutes, and then giving and putting Clint Capella back in for like a good majority of the game. At the same time, I'm so stoked for what kind of leap he can make defensively, because we've talked about it on previous podcasts, but Clint Capella is an absurdly good pick and roll defender in terms of switching on to guards. We saw this in the 2014-15 playoffs against Steph Curry, where there were possessions where he would get switched onto Steph, and he stayed onto him really well. I'm not sure if you noticed that, but he was really doing really well on those switches, and it felt like that's what the Rockets are trying to do schematically. I'm not sure if that's what they're going to do this year, but if they really want to utilize him, I think having a switching scheme with Clint Capella coming out on the guards, sort of like what the more mobile bigs do in the NBA, like Tristan Thompson, Rudy Gobert, like those guys are given the freedom to switch. I'm not sure if he's going to get that right away. But if they do, I think if he improves as a rim protector, he has the potential to be a really special defensive player. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not exactly on board with like a switching scheme. I don't think this team will rebound well enough to have like Capella move out on the guards on the perimeter like often. I think if you have an emergency switch, I think Capella is very capable of handling that, and he's really mobile, and that is fine. But I think Capella is perfectly fine in like just sitting back as the big and icing the pick and roll and just being mobile and disrupting the ball handler's dribble and that kind of stuff. I think that he can do that fine, and it would probably work out very well. I think he has very high ceiling on defense. Probably not this year, where you're going to see him as like a major plus on defense, but maybe a plus with little spurts of elite defense here and there and that's definitely something to be excited about, because he's only 22, I think.
Yeah, and that's kind of the feel I get with him. I don't think he's where he needs to be rim protection-wise. I looked at Nylon Calculus a few weeks ago when I was writing that column on Clint Capella. He's not there yet, but last year he put up equivalent rim protection stats with Dwight Howard, and that really, surprised me, because Dwight Howard, last year, although he wasn't as good defensively as he's been in the past, he was still a stable rim protector that you depended on, and Clint Capella equated his production. Now, I'm not saying Clint Capella will be nearly the rim protector Dwight was, but the fact that he was able to equate him last year really surprised me. So the thing we mentioned at the top of the podcast was, everything felt looser in the press conference. All the players felt like they relaxed, they felt excited, and that's something Trevor Ariza was talking about early in the press conference. Let's go listen to that real quick.
I think everybody has a different spirit. I think everybody being back here is very excited to be here. You know, just being around everybody, it's, you know, it feels good.
So, with that being said, did you notice that with other players, like where they just felt like they were relaxed and they spoke calmly, they spoke like they wanted the season to begin?
Yeah, Clint was kind of laid back, but I felt like everybody else was really excited. I think Clint is just always excited no matter what, so it doesn't really change how he feels. But I think the rest of the team was very excited. I think that Harden having those mini camps has really helped the team chemistry, at least from a standpoint of initial relationships. I think that they're closer than a team that was just put together recently would normally be. I'm not sure, but that's the sense that I get. And I think, like I said, Dwight not being here is a breath of fresh air, and I think that it helps the relationships between Patrick and Trevor and Harden, where you don't really have to worry about what Dwight thinks or, like, oh, what are we going to do with Dwight or anything like that. I think that they're just ready to start the season and ready to see how they do without Dwight.
Yeah, and another narrative, like I was particularly focused on going into media day, was seeing the condition of Harden and to seeing like how he kind of felt, like and how he looked going into media day, because he came into training camp and let's just say he looked fat. He did not look in great shape. Everybody noticed it, and it resulted to poor play to start the season. And he was actually asked about that during the press conference. So let's go ahead and listen to that.
Perfect. I've been in the lab all summer.
So, with that being said, like, did you notice, like, what did you notice from Harden's body type? Did you feel like he was in peak condition, ready to start the season?
He wasn't as, he was somewhere in between, like, last year and what he was in off seasons and in like and I think he was somewhere between what he was last season and what he was the previous years in terms of body shape. I don't know. I've analyzing his body shape feels a little bit weird, but it's you know, it's something that you definitely got to worry about with Harden because he cannot be trusted in that sense in my eyes. So, you know, I thought he looked reasonable, and he's going to be thinner because he's going to be going through training camp and a month of training camp and preseason games before opening day. So he's going to be thinner, and that's something to keep in mind while we look at the body shape that he's currently in.
Yeah, and it's going to be a coming theme for Harden for probably the rest of his career. We just never know whether Harden's going to come into camp in shape or not. He tends to play himself into shape a lot. And fortunately this year, he did not have any nagging injuries. His ankle was fine. He worked out a lot during the offseason. We saw a lot of video of that. We saw him organizing camps for guys. So it did feel like he got into, you know, peak shape and ready for the season. As far as conditioning wise, I think he's there, and I agree with you on body type. I don't think he's all the way there yet. I think after training camp he will be, but he looked. I think it's definitely a step up from where he was last season. So the second thing I really noticed during his press conference was he was asked what would be a successful season for the Rockets, and this is what he said.
Consider a successful season for this team?
Championship.
Is that
realistic? Realistic. I think we have more than enough, you know, in that locker room to win, you know. And we're willing and able to compete with anybody on any given night.
So, and this wasn't just Harden. You saw this with Ryan Anderson. You saw this with Patrick Beverley. And, Do you think they're being really lofty in their expectations? That's the sense I get. I think they're expecting too much out of themselves. I just don't think they have the roster in front of them. What are your thoughts when you first heard that?
I thought I from a standpoint of just listening to what James said, I think James is an extremely confident fellow and has maybe too much confidence in his play and his ability. Mm-hmm. And even though I don't think his confidence necessarily hurts him on the floor, I don't think that it gives him realistic expectations for this season. And, you know, hearing the other people talk about championship or bust or some or stuff like that, you know, James is saying it. The leader is saying championship or bust. So I think that some of what they're saying is because Harden is so confident in himself, and he's saying stuff like this team could win a championship. So it would look kind of weak if Harden, the leader, was saying championship or bust, and everybody else was saying, I don't know about that, you know?
Yeah.
So and like, I think that they're just sort of following the leader, so to speak.
Yeah.
In that sense.
And like, when I tweeted the quote out, you know, I got a lot of backlash from it. And I can understand in the sense of they're probably, let's be honest, they're not winning a championship next year. And if you expect them to win the championship, you're out of your mind. And so, yeah, I can understand that type of backlash. But as far as, you know, expecting a championship, I mean, what do you expect from these athletes, man? Like, we expect them to be supremely confident people, which they are. I mean, you have to be to get at the top of their game. And then at the same time, we expect them to lower their expectations. I mean, like, what do you want from these athletes, right? Like, you want them to be supremely confident, and that's what makes them so damn good. And so I had no problem with it. I do think he's in for a bit of a disappointment if he actually does, in his heart of hearts, expects that. And we saw that not with just the players. I think Maury mentioned it early in his press conference. He said he expects them to win 50 plus games and get home court advantage, which was eye opening for me. Cause like, while 50 wins is certainly a ceiling for them, like, that's a possibility. I don't think it's reasonable to expect that much from them.
Yeah. I think with Morey, the general manager doesn't want to like put a cap on what a team, especially like a team that's not going to be that young. Like, the Rockets will be young, but there will be veterans who want to win a championship. And, you know, Morey doesn't, like I said, doesn't want to put a cap on expectations. I think he wants the players to have whatever expectations the players have. So I'm perfectly fine with him probably saying that the expectation is what is realistically the ceiling for this team, 50-ish wins and a home court advantage. That's probably the max ceiling at this point.
Yeah, and the next thing I noticed in this press conference was kind of he was asked about his leadership. And that's something we've all been questioning for like the past few months, you know, because with that horrible season last year, you know, questions arise about a player's leadership, you know, the best player on the team, his leadership. And fair enough, that's stuff that needs to be addressed. And this is what he had to say about that.
I gotta, you know, get back to how I was. And so, you know, my focus level, the things that I can control, I have to be a lot better at. And then once I get myself figured out, then I can help others. And so that was one of the main things that I focus on this summer. And so that's why I'm in a good place right now. I'm excited. And that's, you know, why, you know, I gathered the guys together to, you know, get this thing going.
And he brought up an interesting point when he said he gathered the guys together. Because you could certainly see this offseason, he took an initiative to get everybody on the same page. As soon as free agency was over, you know, he organized workouts in Las Vegas, in Miami, and he made a real effort to get these guys on the same page. And that's not something that's unique to this season, but it felt more important this offseason because he did do something similar to that last year. But it felt more like he, first of all, he did more workouts this offseason. And second of all, it just coming off the season that he came off of, I think it displays a good display of leadership to kind of, you know, corral the guys and get them, get everybody on the same page, get to know everybody on and off the court, and also have workouts, feel everybody out, and stuff like that. What did you take away from his press conference?
My takeaway was, if he hasn't matured at all, he's doing a really good job of pretending that he has. And I'm inclined to believe that he has at least somewhat matured. It would take an extreme effort for him to say all these things and sound the way that he sounds and still not be mature, if that makes sense. I don't see why anyone would go out of their way to look like they were this much more mature than they actually are. So I think I'm inclined to believe that he has matured, and I think that there has been certainly nothing but good signs so far this offseason and media day in terms of what he's developed into as a leader.
So you're on the side of kind of buying into it, on buying into Harden as a leader this year, because that's going to be a storyline that not only we're going to be watching, guys around the NBA, you know, national guys like Matt Moore, Zach Lowe, everybody's going to be watching out for this. If he can truly lead a team to success, and he's done it before, but in the fashion of not falling off, staying grounded, and you know, being a true leader. So are you buying into it?
As I said, I'm inclined to believe him at this point, but I'm not going to make any complete declarations until the season starts.
That's fair.
I guess.
That's fair. And certainly, I mean, he hasn't given you any reason to he hasn't stepped on the court yet. And so, you know, until that happens, until we see how this Rockets team fares next season, we can't say anything with absolute assertion. So I think it's completely fair on your part. And so another thing that he was pressed about during his press conference was obviously his defense. And he's asked about this every year. And, you know, Harden's kind of had this pattern of trying one year and then resting on his laurels the next year. And I feel like he's going to have a bounce back year, but this is what he had to say about his defense.
You know, and so I got to be better, and I will be better. And so, you know, that's where we are. And, you know, like I said, I looked in the mirror. I figured out that I got to be better, you know, as a basketball player, as a person. And then it'll be easier for me to lead.
Critics annoy you a little bit, or is it just kind of white noise?
It's white noise, because I'm more than capable, and I mean, I know I can play defense and offense. I can one of the best players in this league, and so, you know, like I said, last year was just a blur. It was just everything was happening so fast, and you know, we all go through it in life. We all have bad, you know, days, bad years. I mean, who doesn't? But you know, it's the bounce back, you know, that makes you stronger.
So basically he said, you know, like last year was a blur. He feels he could bounce back this year. Are you buying into it? Do you think James Harden is going to be a better defender this year?
Yeah, I do. Because I think I was of the belief that he improved during the All-Star break, but it just went unnoticed. So I don't see any reason to believe that he won't at least improve some. The question for me, at least, is how much he improves, because he can be a good defender. He doesn't have to be a lockdown defender, but in 2015 he was at least close to being a good defender. So I would like to see that from him, and maybe this decreased workload in terms of how hard he has to work on offense will allow him to be a good defender and maybe even better than he was in 2015. But just like with the leadership, I'm going to have to see it.
Yeah. And, And again, as far as defense, I'm with you. I think he's gonna have a bounce back season. I think it's hard not to have a bounce back season after everybody's throwing it in your face all the time, and just how bad he was last year. I think the first half of last season, I mean, that was some of the worst defense I've seen from James Harden ever in his whole career. And that's not counting 2013-14. That was absolutely terrible. And I know what stretch you're talking about, post All-Star break. I noticed it too, but it seemed to be brief. Like, it lasted for like a couple weeks and then it went away. It was like a 10 or 12 game stretch where he was playing absolutely great, like good defense. Like, he wasn't harming the team, and it seemed to play well as far as their playoff push.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to go ahead and disagree with you on the beginning of the season being the worst we've seen from Harden, because in my opinion, 2014 was atrocious, because he had the bad off ball defense, and then he had that like thing that he would do like twice a game, the Ole defense, where he would just let someone blow by him and try to get the wraparound steal. Mm-hmm. And he did all the time, and that was, I feel like that is head and shoulders the worst defense that I've ever seen from him. But I could also be wrong. I could be biased in that sense.
Yeah, I just thought the condition he was in kind of led to some terrible off-ball defense. He was absolutely horrendous in transition too, and that's something that's something we never talk about with Harden. But yeah, and that's not all his fault. I mean, the whole team was bad. Trevor was really bad in transition last year. At the same time, I do think he needs to hold himself accountable. I think he will this season. I'm a little optimistic on that end. And so I don't want to play this clip, but Eric Gordon mentioned something that really intrigued me as far as how good Harden can be next year offensively. He thought James Harden could easily average like 10 assists per game. Do you agree with that assessment? Because, you know, I thought about this today, and Mike D'Antoni's mentioned this before. He thinks he could average 12 or 13 assists per game. And I looked at the numbers. I looked at how many passes he makes per game, and just the success rate on them. I mean, as you know, the Rockets were middle of the pack in shooting year after year after year. So a lot of the shots he created went kind of missed, right? And a lot of the attention he grabs, you know, going into the lane, because he grabs a crap load of attention. And Ryan Anderson was mentioning earlier some of the games he was playing with Harden during the summer were some of the most open shots he's ever had in his life. So I can see a situation where he averages around 9 assists per game. I'm not ready to jump the gun and say that he's ready to average 10 assists per game. I will say it's possible under Mike D'Antoni. If he buys in right away and he does the necessary things, like getting the ball out of his hands a little bit quicker, doing a little less isolation, and being more committed to moving off the ball, I think he can be a 10 assist game guy, but I'm not ready to go there yet. What about you?
10 assists is pushing it for me. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to get his, you know, 27 to 30 points per game this season. I feel that is something is going to happen just because he's such a lethal scorer in that sense. So if he averages 30, in my mind, because I don't think I've ever seen it, I just don't know what 30 points and 10 assists looks like, because I've never, like I said, I've never seen that happen.
Yeah, it's so stupid. It's stupid to even think about. But, I mean, post All-Star break, Harden was averaging around 30 points per game, but I don't think I remember a period of time where he was simultaneously averaging 30 and even 9. I don't think he's even gotten that high before.
Yeah, 30 and 9, I think, is possible. And I actually was listening to another podcast with some people that I like. And they raised the question, is 30 and 9 possible for Harden? And they all said yes, if he buys into D'Antoni's system. So I'll say 30 and 9 is possible, but 30-10 for me is pushing it, just because I, like I said, I just don't know what that looks like. 30-10 is unfathomable to me.
Yeah, and to me, I'm not even ready to go to 30-9 yet. I'm 28.5-9 on really efficient numbers can be good for me.
That's probably more realistic in terms of what he will do. I was just speaking from a standpoint of like what is possible. I agree with you.
Yeah, and the biggest thing I'm going to track next season is if he lowers the amount of isolations he had, because I think he led the league in isolations last year. If he lowers that, and he lowers the amount of time with the ball in his hands, he's really in for a historically great offensive season, because he has all the skills. It's going to take a lot of buy-in from him and D'Antoni both, because I think the potential for a clash is definitely there. And we're not discussing it because we're really optimistic on them. But the potential for a D'Antoni-Harden clash is there, and we should acknowledge it. But at the same time, if they both buy into each other, if they both sacrifice, like, okay, maybe Harden's not going to average 10 or 12 assists per game, and Harden acknowledges, okay, maybe I don't have to average like 30 a night, and maybe I can just, you know, up the assist totals and, you know, take a lot of stress off my body in doing this and trust my teammates more. Maybe it works and we get something truly great in terms of offensive production.
Yeah, I think a big priority is getting him to give up the ball quicker.
Yeah.
That's the first priority. And then the second one that's kind of low-key in my eyes is just having him bring the ball up every time like a traditional point guard, because last year he didn't actually do that all that often. It was just kind of, and I feel like that really stunted the offense sometimes, having Pat Bev bring the ball up, and it's sort of like everybody let's scramble to try to get James the ball in like the front court.
Yeah.
And that really put a cap on how good the offense could be last year. So if, and D'Antoni has hinted, I think, at the fact that he will bring the ball up more this year, like a traditional point guard, and that's something that I'm going to be excited to see.
Yeah, and I think you and me both watched a crap load of 7 seconds or less this summer in preparing to write our columns on D'Antoni, and I think you noticed it, and I noticed it too. Steve Nash brought the ball up, and he initiated everything quickly. And he was moving off the ball. Like, he made that first pass, and he was gone. Everybody was moving on the floor. Nobody was stuck on a corner. Everybody was setting screens. Everybody was moving. And that's something we haven't seen from Rockets offense. What we normally see is, as you said, Patrick Beverley moves the ball up. He gives it to Harden in his spot, and he goes to work. And sometimes he moves off the ball, but when he's off the ball, you often see him sitting on a corner and kind of waiting for a catch and shoot. I think if he moves around a lot, it can be like absolute hell for a defense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that can really make this offense transcendent in terms of the rest of the league. I think that is what is going to happen to get them to be a top two offense. I think that they can get a top five-ish offense just with Antoni's system and being getting like constant pick and rolls and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But what's going to make it like top two-ish is getting Harden to be dedicated to moving off the ball.
Yeah, and so I think we covered everything as far as media day is concerned. Some positive signs. Everybody seems pumped. I'm excited for the season to begin. I'm ready for the NBA basketball to begin. I got my league pass ready. I'm ready to watch my teams, and let's get to it. I'm ready. And throw out your Twitter and your anything you're going to be working on this season.
I'm at Rocket Intellect. Just how you spell rocket and how you spell intellect, and what I'm going to be working on for your site, obviously, is I'm going to be doing a weekly recap, just basically going over what transpired in a week for the Rockets. So if there were like 3 or 4 games in a week for Rockets, I'm going to write a column about those 3 or 4 games and going over those games in one column. And I'm just going to be tweeting out a lot of thoughts about the NBA in general. I don't know if I'm going to actually write about the rest of the league, but I'm going to be sort of covering the rest of the league as a macro blogger, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm excited to seeing what you have to say. I'm excited to read these weekly columns from you. And yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Red Nation Hoops, and you can check out our website at rednationhoops.com. Check out our podcast, subscribe to it on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play. And yeah, give us a good rating on iTunes if you enjoyed the podcast. If you didn't enjoy the podcast, give us a good rating anyways, because that's just the right thing to do. All right, good night, guys.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.